Thank you for the introduction, and thank you for, well, I'd like to thank myself and the other organizer for inviting me to speak here. I was here 9 years ago in this summer school, and harmonic analysis, Schumann varieties, and the trace formula, and I never knew at that time that I would work on this topic, but I'm glad that I chose this. Let me start with an overview of what I'm going to do. So let's fix the prime L and fix an isomorphism QL bar C and a number field F. The Langlands correspondence is the conjectural bijection between automorphic representations and Galois representations. By Galois representations, I mean like continuous and unreified almost everywhere. This is the conjectural global Langlands correspondence. Should be bijection, but to make it precise, we need to look at automorphic representations of, say, GL and F. And here, look at the full Galois group of F into GL and QL bar. Still, it's not quite what we expect because we are kind of looking at complex analytic objects and analytic objects. So, I mean, in a very, very naive way, you expect to have a natural bijection for maybe algebraic objects, because you don't really, even for numbers, you don't really expect to compare analytic numbers and complex numbers. So it's natural to impose some algebraicity condition on both sides. Here, algebraic will mean drum or potentially semi-simple at places over L. Here, algebraic means the condition due to close L, and I think it was explained before, but basically the infinitesimal character at the infinite places are kind of integral and integral up to shift, and yeah. Well, there's a way to say it precisely, but I'll quickly go down to regular algebraic case where I'll say a little more. Okay, and I'll also assume that these are look at just cuspidal and irreducible objects, doesn't matter. So this is what we want to know. But in my talk, what I'm going to do is, well, this is a big conjecture, but I'd like to construct an arrow on some subset of automorphic representations satisfying two additional conditions, namely regular algebraic, and I'll explain this in a minute, well, say polarizable representations. And I'll explain this in a minute, but this guy, this unfortunate guy is in a death row. To be executed in 2 days, I think, at least, when F is a CM field, I think. Seems like that's the case, but anyhow, at least for this is a theorem, and I'll explain. I mean, the purpose of my talk is to explain proof of the theorem. So it consists of two parts, how to construct the arrow, namely, how to find the Galois representation given an automorphic representation, and then when you find the automorphic representation, how can you show that it's the expected arrow? So, so that means we have to check, for instance, compatibility with local Langlands correspondence for GLN at all finite places V of F, then the Galois representation will be uniquely determined. Okay, so, well, for, next thing to do is to give a statement of the main theorem. I'll make this a little more precise now. So regular algebraic, which is a general definition for any number field, it means that the, well, one way to say it is the infinite component of pi for such a representation has same infinitesimal character as some irreducible algebraic representation. Let me just say briefly in this way. And to define the notion of polarizable representations, I'll assume that F is a CM or totally real field. And this will be in effect from now on. So pi is polarizable if there exists a Hackett character, say psi. Ah, by the way, I want to let F plus be the maximal totally real subfield where C is a complex conjugation here. So if you can find the Hackett character such that, well, pi is self-dual or conjugate self-dual up to a character shift, and, well, there's a condition imposed on psi, which is that value at minus one is independent of V, or it has the same value for all infinite places. So, okay. And what's the theorem? And it seems like this is believed to be superfluous, but I don't know what we know about this condition. Oh, yes. Okay, so here's the main theorem. Assume that pi satisfies all these properties, cuspidal, regular algebraic, and polarizable. Then there exists a Galois representation such that it's compatible with local Lowndes correspondence everywhere. So let's say this rec means the local Lowndes for GLN. Rec pi v is the same as, or, well, let's say I put a shift. It's not important for my talk, but this is the same as the Weibullian representation associated to R pi, restricted to the decomposition group at V, and I Frobenius semi-simplify. So that's going to be true at all finite places V, and there are many other properties one can prove, but I'm not going to say much about the other properties. So in particular, this is true also when V divides L, and in that case, implicit here is that this representation is potentially semi-stable at places above L. And, well, that's, I guess, going to be explained in some other talk by Richard, I think. But in my talk, I'll quickly look at the case only when V doesn't divide L. So let me say it. Yes, yes, I'll say that, but yes, it's a semi-simple, continuous, semi-simple, unrefined almost everywhere, color representation. Believed to be reducible, but we don't know it in all cases yet, I think. Okay, so let me say I consider V doesn't divide L only, and also quickly make a hypothesis, which is that when N is even, then the, well, pi infinity or the infinitesimal character of pi infinity sufficiently regular. One can make this condition very explicit, and actually it's a kind of very mild kind of sufficient regular condition, but I'm not going to make it precise. I'll just explain where this is going to play a role. And maybe I can also say that this is going to be removed. Well, it was removed by Genevieve Harris and Karayani. So you will see a little more about this in Karayani's talk, I think. But there are other remarks to make. So first of all, well, there are two things maybe. This irreducibility of R pi, as far as I know, this is known at, on, say, density one set of primes. Well, I would loosely say density one set of primes L. And also there's a, yes? Yeah, maybe, yes. Yeah, under, yes, some further conditions. And there's a kind of sign of, yes? Yeah, I think it's due to Calegari G, right? But in general, yeah, we need some more conditions. Yes, and there's a recent progress also on the sign of R pi, which I'm not going to say much, but I mean, that's due to, I think, Taylor and Taibbi, and also Eli Genevieve in the CM case, where sign means a little, something a little different. But really there's another thing that some non-regular cases are known. So it's start from probably Dillon's error in the case of GL2, but in the higher rank case, it's due to Taylor and recently Taylor and Goldring. But really, another remark I want to make here is that, I mean, really the proof of the theorem has been done by many, many people, but roughly this progress can be divided into two different stages, where it's basically it's a pre-fundamental lemma period and post-fundamental lemma period. So here, it is the proof by Lomon, Go, Valspege, and many other people of the fundamental lemma was established. Before then, basically the theorem was already known when pi has a discrete series component at some finite place, but what happens after the proof of fundamental lemma was that this has been removed. So, I mean, what really makes it possible is that proof of the fundamental lemma. So it's important to point out. Okay. So you may wonder, if you look at this representation pi, then the polarizable representation, well, when f is CM extension of f plus, then maybe its unitary group is relevant. But when f is f plus, then you're looking at self-dual or essentially self-dual representation. So you may feel like using symplectic or orthogonal groups to study them, but actually, everything can be reduced to the unitary case. So I'll say a little bit about this. This reduction step will be useful in some other stages. So the key gadget here is the attaching lemma. I'm not going to say this precisely. The attaching lemma itself is due to first Blasius Ramakrishnan, and then was enhanced by Harris Taylor and Sorensen. So the statement is roughly like this. You have a number field K and some infinite set of quadratic extensions. You can do it more generally, but let's consider only quadratic extensions. So it's infinite set and sort of general. So I have to make it precise. But basically what you're given is the data of Galois representations over K prime, say GLN, such that is Galois invariant. So for each quadratic extension, you have a non-trivial automorphism. So it's Galois invariant, and there's a natural compatibility condition. So when you pass to bi-quadratic extension, then they're all compatible. In that case, you can find the Galois representation over K, which restrict to all these representations. Well, I don't have much space, so let's say rho K, such that rho K restricted to K prime, isomorphic to rho K prime for all K prime in the set. So basically what it means is that for us, it means that you can basically pass to quadratic extensions when you're constructing these Galois representations, and then later you can just patch them down to your original field. So by passing to quadratic extensions, you can kind of make things simpler in many ways. Ooh. Yes, I mean, that's another subject, but for us, this is enough. Oh, thanks. Thank you. Okay, so what do I want to say? The point is that here's the reduction step one. Well, you can assume, first of all, this is not the, these are not the same, but it's really CM quadratic extension. And you can also assume that this character psi is trivial. So that's the consequence of the patching lemma. Well, why is that? Well, briefly, when f is equal to f plus, then what you do is you consider infinitely many quadratic extensions, CM quadratic extensions, sufficiently general. And then you construct Galois representations to base change of pi to those quadratic extensions, and then you patch them down using the patching lemma. So that's why you don't have to consider f equals f plus here. And here, the point is that you can find some Hecke character such that when you have polarizable representation, then basically by twisting by a certain character chi, you can make it exactly conjugate self-dual without a character twist. So, I mean, you can find such a character. So now what you have to do is just construct Galois representation to chi, pi tensor chi, and then go back to pi. Okay. Okay. So then, so what that tells us is, now if you look at these conditions, then now it's really natural to consider unitary groups and their associated Shimura varieties in all cases. So finally, we are ready to introduce the data for Shimura varieties. In particular, let V be a Hermitian vector space of dimension M over F. So I'll say in a minute what M has to do with N, because we are looking at GLN representation. And G is going to be unitary similitude group associated with V, but the multiplier factor will be in Q, and we can view it naturally as a reductive group over Q. And there's a Shimura variety, so it's going to be moduli theoretic Shimura variety, PL type Shimura variety. So it's associated with G and H. I'm not going to make H explicit, but you can construct a Shimura variety here. But the point is that, I mean, to make things work, I mean, what do we want? As was explained in Emerton's talk, we want to see a coupling of the automorphic representation and the desired Galois representation in the commutative of this guy. For this, you have to make a careful choice of V. So that's my next point. So I'll just do it here. So you want the following V, so that's going to be my hypothesis two. So you choose V such that V, G, the group G, unitary similitude group, is quasi-split at all finite places. Well, the reason for this is, later we start from a cosplay representation on GLN, but then this is a unitary group. So this is to kill any local obstruction for, in order for G to accommodate representation coming from GLN, roughly speaking. So that's an important condition, and that's why this condition was not satisfied in the previous work by Clozel, Kadwick, and Harris Taylor. That's why you have a local obstruction, a local condition on pi. Okay, so that's important. We cannot give up. And also another condition at infinity is that you want a particular signature at infinity of this type. One reason is that if you remember again from Emerton's talk, then I'm sorry to those who are not here, but so in Emerton's, but so you have this highest weight representation V mu, where mu is associated coming from H in the data definition more varieties. So this V mu, for this choice of signature, V mu is going to be standard representation of GLN for the dual group of G. Well, roughly. GLM, yes. Yes. So it's going to be standard representation, or it's dual. Depending on how you set things up, of GLM. So it's an M-dimensional representation, okay. But if you use some other signature, like if you have this at two places, then you will have tensor of two standard representations, or you could have like exterior power of standard representations, in which case it's much more difficult to recover M-dimensional representation from, say, its exterior power, or anything, something like that. So both conditions are quite essential, but the unfortunate part of the story is that we cannot always. Yeah, dual group is GL1 cross, finite product of GLMs. But it's a standard representation on one GLM factor and then trivial on all the other factors. Yes. So I'm a little oversimplifying the picture. But the unfortunately there is a obstruction for satisfying this hypothesis. So when M is odd, turns out that there is no obstruction. So that's good, but when M is even, you often have obstruction. Not going to make it precise, but it's kind of, obstruction lives in Zima 2. So it looks harmless, but very difficult to kill if you want to keep those conditions. So in the end, we want to look at M is odd case to make this work. But then now go back to our original problem. The goal was that when you had a GLN automorphic representation, we wanted to find the n-dimensional Galois representation. So, which means that when n is odd, we might as well just choose M equals N, and at least we expect to have n-dimensional representation out of the cohomology, so that looks good. But when N is even, we want to do the same, but the trouble is that there is an obstruction for satisfying this hypothesis, so we want to pass to the other case, and the natural way to do it is choose M equals N plus 1, or if you want to really hurt yourself, then you can do N plus 3 or N plus 5, but N plus 1 is the easiest thing to do. So that's the thing. But then now you realize that you're going to receive probably n plus one dimensional representations out of this gadget. So something doesn't add up. So in this case, what it means is that you need to look at endoscopic representation, by which I mean, well, you're really looking at, say, if you believe in the Langlands correspondence, then, well, you have a L parameter corresponding to a representation of G, and then you compose with this V mu on the L group, and you end up with, well, generically, you may end up with n plus one dimensional representations, but in some other cases, that n-dimensional representation will decompose into n-dimensional plus one-dimensional representation. So you may hope that this it decomposes and the n-dimensional piece is the expected Galois representation we want to construct. So that's what we are going to do. And as you can see, when n is even, the story is more complicated, and that's partly why, or almost mainly because, many the reason why we make this hypothesis one when n is even, to make this work. Because there's some kind of obstruction for doing that, but that's very mild. Okay, so okay, next. So we have chosen our V and Shimura varieties. We want to make, in fact, additional hypothesis. So that may be called reduction step two. So what we want to do is, well, again, use this patching lemma. Basically, it allows you to pass to quadratic extensions, and by doing that, you can assume that F contains an imaginary quadratic field, so that EF is EF plus for some imaginary quadratic field. And also, you may avoid the case when F plus equals Q, so that you do have one compact factor at infinity. That makes our Shimura variety compact. And there are some other hypotheses you can also make to control the set of Rheinfeld primes in this story, but I'm going to suppress it. But also, again, a similar idea. Not exactly the patching lemma, but by passing to quadratic extensions, what you can also do is, well, remember that after construction, we want to check local global compatibility at all finite places. But in fact, you can check this compatibility at V at split primes. Place V of F. So split means that, well, so you have F Q E. So you restrict to prime P downstairs, and then you assume that that restriction of V to Q is placed in E. Okay, so that's the condition. Well, what's good about this? Well, in that case, your unitary group locally at V looks like general linear groups, and we all know that general linear groups are easier than unitary groups. So, and that also simplifies the study of geometry at that place. So maybe I'll call this hypothesis three. So we start to see that a bunch of nice things are true under this hypothesis. 2 and 3 combined will tell you, well, let me just point out a few things. First of all, our Shimura variety is a projective system of smooth projective M minus one dimensional variety over F. So first of all, it's not just quasi-projective, but projective because, well, basically because we have a compact factor at infinity because F plus is not Q. And it's M minus one dimensional, which you can see from the infinite place. And its reflex field is exactly F, also thanks to that signature condition. Also, another thing that makes our lives easier is that if you take the AE point of G, then G itself is a unitary similitude group, but it's going to split into, well, product of general linear groups. And probably I'll ignore this multiplier factor in my talk. So basically what happens is later we will make use of some weak base change. Can make it actually a little more precise than weak base change, but it's going to be GA representation. From GA representation to GAE representation, it's a quadratic base change, but GAE looks like that, so we really end up with the quadratic weak base change allows me to pass from GA to GLMAF. And so this will be of some use in our construction of Galois representations. Okay. So finally, I'm ready to tell you where the Galois representation exactly comes from. To do that, as you have seen in Emerton's talk, we look at the cohomology of this Shimura variety. In fact, you choose another data, an irreducible algebraic representation of G, say over QL bar, and I consider the cohomology of Shimura variety defined to be, I'll just say that implicitly put alternating sum of cohomology. With some analytic local system coefficient, which comes from that irreducible representation. So I'm going to see this representation as a group, element of a Grothendieck group of GA, a finite. Let's make my notation consistent with the others. So it's an element of Grothendieck group, but you can also write it as a direct sum. In fact, we are in the compact case, so you can appeal to Matsushima's formula to show that it's actually a direct sum. So you have this GA representations, and it's going to, these representations will be coupled with Galois representation, virtual Galois representation in the cohomology. So these guys will be important. Yeah, I guess so, yes. So capital R will give us this lowercase r in a minute. Okay, so finally, construction of this R pi. So pi is a polarizable representation, conjugate self-zero representation, irregular algebraic. So for this, loosely speaking, I define pi part of the cohomology to be the sum of R of pi f, where, well, I look at those pi f whose base change is capital pi f, maybe away from p. So remember that the weak base change lands in GLM AF representation, so we can sort of do it. But in fact, I'm not going to use the same pi, but this is not GLN, but GLM representation. So let's make this definition, and then I'll explain how to construct R pi out of this. Okay. So we consider two cases depending on the parity of N. So when N is odd, so M is N, then there's not much to do. Pi tilde is just pi. They're all GLN and GLM representation, and what you want to do is this R pi will be defined to be this pi part of the cohomology. Well, to be precise, this is not exactly our R pi, but the difference is minor in that, well, basically what you have to do is mod out some multiplicity. This, it turns out that this guy is really kind of constant multiple of this guy, so you have to kind of, yes?
I'm sorry, but I don't think it's defined precisely enough
Yes, I... Yes, I mean, to make it precise, actually we have to control the set of Rankine primes, but here, for the purpose of my talk, I'll just say that it's a base change is compatible with unreified base change at almost all places.
Almost all places.
Yes, yes.
Which may vary with pi.
This pi? Well, in fact, depending on pi, we actually fix a set of bad primes, and then outside there, we impose this condition. But yeah, to do that, I have to explain the hypothesis on the set of Rankine primes, so I'm kind of avoiding it. Okay. So basically, you model multiplicity, and there can be some unpleasant twist by a character, so you just untwist. But you're basically you have got R pi at this stage, and when and it's even, it's a little more complicated. So you take pi to be, so this GLN plus 1, that's GLN. So you need some complementary character chi to get an GLN plus 1 representation. So you choose a Hecker character of f. Conjugate self-dual. So pi tilde is not cospital in this case, but nevertheless, you just go through this construction. It works. Yes. In fact, yeah, it's an irreducible induction here and tempered. Okay, so R pi is going to be this again, pi tilde part, and from there you can obtain R pi. So for the rest of my talk, I'll just explain how to get a handle on this pi part of the cohomology. Okay. Once you do that, the rest is quite easy. Okay, but at least this gives you a sense of where we get the representation from. So the remaining job is to check that these representations, or maybe these representations, satisfy the local global compatibility at split places. At split places V, so that's the final part of my talk. So this strategy is not so bad. Well, basically what you want to do is to compute pi tilde part of the cohomology at place V, which means that here now you can restrict to the local Galois action. So in terms of geometry, you can just look at an integral model over viadic integer ring and study its geometry to say something about cohomology. So you compute this at the via integral model over viadic integer ring. So even in the Aikula-Shimura's work, you do this with modular curves. You look at, for instance, reduction mod P of modular curves and study geometry there to relate Frobenius and the Hecke operator at P. But here the strategy really depends on the counting point formula technique justified by Lefschetz transformula. In fact, there are two ways to go. So here I explain one approach, approach depending on relying on this the things explained by Laurent Fark and Mantovan. But another approach I believe will be explained by Peter Schulze. But I'll use this approach to use Newton stratification and then study cohomology of each stratum to obtain significant information about the cohomology of Shimura varieties. So how does it go? There are like three important inputs. So the first input was explained in Mantovan's talk. Basically, it says that the cohomology is sum of contributions from each Newton stratum, in which, in this case, it's actually parametrized by integers between 0 and n minus 1. So there's some extension functor of the cohomology of Igusa variety associated with H. So this H corresponds to B in the previous talks. is a parameter for Newton's strata, and more precisely, it looks like it corresponds to the following Newton's strata, Newton polygon. It's one here, h here, and m minus h here. So it's, in particular, when h is 0, you get the zero-dimensional supersingular stratum, and when h is m minus 1, you get the ordinary stratum, most ordinary stratum. Okay, so let me recall this extension. EH. So EH is a morphism from the Grothendieck group of JH to Grothendieck group of G and the Weyl group at V. So it's sending rho from rho to X to JH QP homology of the Rapoport zinc space associate at H, which is a Lubin Tate space in this case, essentially, with rho. So that's the map, and you have seen this formula in Mantovan's talk. So that reduces our computation to computation of this EH and the computation of the cohomology of Yagusa varieties. So the next input will be the a summation formula. So it's really essentially due to Harrison Taylor. Okay, so what does it say? Oh, yes. It's a inductive limit of the Yagusa cohomology at finite levels. So I want this, but then in Alena's notation, there was level M here, but then I take limit over M so that I arrive at this cohomology. So that cohomology will be given an action away from P and the quasi-isogeny group at P. Yes. I take LRD cohomology of this characteristic P variety, and P is not equal to L. So here I need the condition that V doesn't divide L. Okay. So we have this summation formula. So I have a pi p tensor with the local Langlands correspondent to pi p. So that's an identity in Grothendieck group of GQP and Weyl group at V. So what is this red H mean? Here, it's a Grothendieck group of going from Grothendieck group of G to Grothendieck group of JH, because pi p is a p component of representation of G. GQP, remember that we are looking at a split prime, so GQP is really general linear group. So it turns out that this is GLN FV times some other factors. And this guy will be something like GLH FV times division algebra with invariant 1 over n minus h over FV times some other factors. So as you can see, this is essentially going from GLN to, well, GL maybe M, to GLH times GL with some division algebra, m 1 over n minus h. So natural map you can think of is some Jacquet-Langlands map composed with Jacquet module. So that's the definition of red H. So from GLN, you apply this map to go down there to get JH representation, and then by applying this EH, you go back to G representation, now coupled also with the V group representation, so that the identity makes sense. So this is the sort of cancellation formula for when you add up cohomology of Newton strata, then a priori each expression may be complicated, but at the end you get something very simple.
So this is kind of Cariot's conjecture.
And in particular in the supercuspidal case, this tells you that at least in alternating some cohomology, you realize the local Langlands correspondence. In the cohomology Lewin Tate space. So the proof really can be viewed as a confirmation of this non-abelian Lewin Tate theory. Okay, so I have like a few minutes to say something about the last input. So really what remains to be understood is the cohomology of this Igusa variety. So for this, one can say the following. Because we are interested in pi part of the cohomology of Shimura variety, by taking pi part in this input number one, it's enough to understand pi part of the cohomology of Igusa variety, and that basically looks like, but well, to be precise, I have to take something like away from P so that this is a virtual representation of JHQP, okay? So in the first case, well, so here, using this identification, pi p consists of v part, which is representation of GLM times other things. So this is a good place where I can confuse pi p with pi v, so that I really view pi p as representation of GLM. So okay, so when n is odd, namely in this table case, and m equals n, we just get the red. But in the endoscopic case, the formula looks more complicated, and I can say, and pi v is equal to, in fact, capital pi v by choosing, well, capital, yes, capital pi v, in that we are looking at a split place, so really we can identify this with the V component of the original GLM representation. So here I look at pi V tensor with chi V or something like that. This is not exactly correct. And yeah, well, You have to kind of induce, sorry?
The slide is unclear. The brackets are applied to the red edge going on. The brackets are applied to your firing.
Yes.
Red edge.
Oh. Yes. So
the way you write,
I mean the I mean that this is just the same as capital pi V.
Okay,
yeah. Yes. I mean lowercase pi V is the capital pi V. And the formula is actually complicated in the second case. So let me just write that this is, it looks something like this, but I mean you have to induce and it decompose and induce and it looks a little complicated. When n is even, you get something like this, and sort of you have like this is consists of two components, and then you have to induce chi v with one of the components to get the final representation. But in any case, this happens when we make good choice of chi. Remember that chi was a kind of auxiliary choice we made in order to get pi tilde. And if you make a good choice, then you get this. Otherwise, you get something different. But the point is that if you plug in these guys into the formulas, then if you plug in something like that into this formula, then you get the corresponding Galois representation for pi. So in the end, you get something you want. Okay. So this, once you can prove something like this, then you are done, right? The after cancellation formula. You get what you want. So you win. So finally, I'm already over time, so the question is how to prove this formula for the cohomology equals a variety. So, by the way, I should say that you need hypothesis one for this. I mean, very briefly, you use, first of all, we get counting point formula for equals a variety. So it's a coming from Lefschetz trait formula and then massaging the formula to make it resemble the geometric expansion of the Otto-Seldon trait formula. So in principle, once you have the good trait formula computing the trace of all the operators acting on this cohomology, you should be able to get this spectral expansion, but then you have to make this step really work. So to do that, you need several inputs here. So you have to first stabilize the formula and then sort of make comparison with the twisted trace formula for GLM. And another important ingredient is that you need also some local harmonic analysis at P relating, well, accounting for this appearance of red H everywhere. So stable stabilization and the twisted trace formula and maybe some harmonic analysis component. But I mean, to make this work really, you need the fundamental lemma to complete the proof, and that's why the theorem was not really available before the proof of the fundamental lemma. So I'm already over time. Let me stop here. Thank you. Mm-hmm.